Today's broadcast is brought to you by Savad Business Solutions. Their passion is in the process. Now, let's get to it. Technology is changing the world, as are the innovators and the entrepreneurs making it happen. Go behind the velvet rope, see how these people think, and understand the mindset of today's game changers. Welcome to The Incubator.
Good morning and welcome back to The Incubator. I am your host, Todd Schnick. Looking forward to today's conversation. I was speaking with our guest pre-show, and there's not a lot of conversation that I've had on this show or any others in the Dreamland Radio Network about disruption of the auto industry. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Say hello to my guest. His name is Ben Houston. He's the Director of Market Operations and the co-founder of Carvana. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us. Before we get into a conversation around Carvana, take a few seconds and inform the audience about you and your background.
Sure. So grew up in Gilbert, Arizona. Went out to college at Stanford. That's actually where I met Ernie, who's the president of Carvana. Yeah. Actually went down the lawyer path. So did law school, practiced in San Diego for 3-4 years, doing a variety of work, but nothing that I think I found super exciting, and got out of that, I guess that was 3-4 years ago now, and got involved in kind of the entrepreneurship world. Been involved with a handful of startups now, and Carvana is the latest one.
Well, I'm going to delay getting into Carvana, but you ultimately chose the entrepreneurial path, but with diversion through the legal world, how has that helped you, or has it hurt you? I'm just curious as to what that experience has, what that's brought to your entrepreneurial endeavors.
So I'd say, you know, law school in general, I felt like is just a great training. It's a great way to learn how to think, how to approach problems. I really just enjoyed law school. The practice of law, what I was doing at a large law firm, I think sometimes dilutes a lot of what that training is. And I think that's part of what pushed me to get into it. So I think it's gave me a nice framework for how to think about problems, to have a nice kind of like regulatory understanding of the world. I think that's been helpful, especially even in the car industry now where regulations are quite literally everywhere. Right. So I think it's been helpful. Probably helpful as something to not have to do full time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just going to say what you had just said was that I always wanted to go to law school, but I never wanted to be an attorney. I mean, because I thought the experience of going getting a law degree would have been really beneficial. So I echo what you said there. So, all right, well, let's get to it. So Carvana, give us the 10,000 foot view. What do you do? How do you serve your market?
Sure. I mean, Carvana, I would say the first of its kind is a 100% online dealership. So you go to Carvana.com, you can search through, you know, got 500 company-owned vehicles, you decide which car you'd like to buy, you can go through, sign contracts, set up financing, schedule a home delivery. All of this can happen in as fast as 10 minutes is the current record.
And that
10 minutes to buy a car. And that car can either be delivered to your home, or if you choose, you can pick it up in what we call our car vending machines, where you'll get a 5-digit code. You show up to our vending machine, punch in the 5 digits, a bay will open up, your car is there waiting, welcome Mr. Customer, here's your 2011 VW Jetta, whatever it might be, and then a representative will greet you. So when we say there's a lot of online activity in the used car space, we're the first that says you can buy a car from start to finish completely online.
In 10 minutes.
10 minutes is the record. We actually brought a guy a trophy and a pizza for that. It was pretty impressive.
I'm surprised, Ben. I mean, what you just described, when you hear about it and you process it and you think about it, it seems blindingly obvious. Why is this just now happening? You know, I really enjoy paying attention to what Elon Musk and Tesla is doing, because I'm just having fun watching him make everybody uncomfortable in that industry. Much like I liked watching Sarah Palin, just because she pissed off all the right people. It was just fun to see her agitate people. That's why I love seeing Uber do in the transportation market. I wonder, I don't know if I should say I worry, but I wonder, is what you're building here going to be another one of those things that people will get frustrated with? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think with success, I think frustration, as you define it, is likely to follow. I mean, to some degree, it's inevitable. I think we're probably better positioned than a Tesla because we are a dealer.
Oh,
and
sure,
so
sure.
We have not as many regulatory hoops necessary to jump through, but to the point of your question, I mean, I think when I describe that, it's not a super innovative idea just to go through this process online. Most people don't like going to a dealership. Most people don't like spending 4.5 hours talking to a salesperson. And so the idea that you can do that whole process and get that vehicle delivered to you and have something you can rely on, it's, you know, every study that is done now will indicate that most people prefer some version of that. And so I think what's stopped a lot of it, you do have, you know, a fairly regimented system of franchise regulations that make it very difficult, I think, to innovate in a lot of these spaces because so much of it is controlled. I also think a lot of people don't have a good understanding of how the franchise system works. My father is a prime example where he's a car guy, loves cars, but even he didn't fully understand the way franchise worked, where he thought when he's buying a car from Ford that was Ford, but it's actually a franchise dealership. You know, in the same way where people go to Apple, they know they're buying from Apple, but the idea that the manufacturer can't directly sell vehicles in the United States, I think is lost on a lot of people. And the cost that's imposed as a result of that franchise system, I'm not sure is well understood. And I think that's been part of why there hasn't been the push for innovation that you've seen in some other industries.
Yeah, you're not buying from Ford, you're buying from Bill Jones Ford.
Exactly.
And I think you're right. I don't know that people understand. I don't know that I fully understood that until probably not that long ago. I mean, are you getting pushback from the industry? I mean, or I think I rattle off a bunch of examples of organizations disrupting their respective space, but I'm thinking of the record industry and how that resisted and fought bitterly. How journalism and, you know, the Washington Posts and the New York Times are trying to resist this change. I mean, are you getting kind of pushback, or is this another way for them to move product?
You know, I think it depends. You know, some of the dealers or some of the manufacturers are flirting with this idea. GM had Shop, Click, Drive. They're playing around a little in this online space. And frankly, we've had a variety of conversations with dealers who are really interested in what we're doing, love our technology, want to learn more about it, want to see if there's a way they could potentially use it. We do get a handful of, you know, salespeople that will be like on our Facebook wall being like, worst idea ever, who would ever do this? And the cool part about that is we'll get customers defending us on our Facebook wall, which is neat. They'll be like, well, I guess I'm an idiot because I did it and I had a great experience. So I think there's some pushback. I don't think it, you know, we're still somewhat contained. We're a startup. We're in Atlanta. We just got into Nashville. So I think as our exposure grows, you know, we've had a couple of decent sized like press articles on Yahoo and whatnot. And there we'll start to see a little bit of pushback and there'll be some discussion around it. But I think most dealers are open to this idea. I think some salespeople are uncomfortable with it. And frankly, we're uncomfortable with, we don't ever want to paint the dealer as a villain because I think there are a lot of great dealers that do a lot of great things. There are a lot of bad habits, I'd say, in the industry, which is why most people, when they think about buying a car, it's sort of like that stomach ache feeling. But what we always frame ourselves is like, we're an alternative to that service. You know, CarMax is the biggest player in the used car industry, and they represent 1.5% of that entire market.
Wow.
So it's wild to think how fragmented that is.
Wow.
And so when we think about that, we say, like, is there a percent and half of people right now, at least, that would want to buy a car online? Like, you know, we think that plus some.
I'll be darned. I would have thought CarMax had a bigger share in that. But again, if you allow yourself to think on it for a second, that begins to make a lot of sense. So at this moment, you're in Atlanta, and I think you said you just broke into the Nashville market.
Correct.
So is that the only place you can get cars from you, or could I get online in Seattle and buy a car from you?
You can. If you want to buy anywhere in the country, we're national in the sense that we will deliver the car. We'll use third-party transporters. If you want to have what I would call like the full Carvana experience, where you either coming to pick it up at the vending machine, or if you wanted to get it delivered to your home, you have to be within 200 miles of us. You can, if you're in Seattle, one thing you can do is you could fly all the way into our vending machine in Atlanta. We'll subsidize your flight, and then we'll put together a cool little itinerary for the road trip back. And so we've actually had a decent chunk of people that'll do that. They'll come fly in. We'll put them here like a little road trip snack gear of trail mix and like some cool restaurants they should hit on the way, and people will come. I think a lot of people are looking for just like a new experience. The cool part is, based on our model, we can offer pretty competitive prices. So even with the additional transport cost that might be associated with a cross-country purchase, for a lot of people, it still worked out economically to still make that choice and pay for the transport.
So I suspect the long-term play is to have vending machines in many, many cities.
Correct.
But I'll be perfectly frank with you. Understanding the quote, I'm doing the air quote, Seattle option, I think it might be more fun to fly into Atlanta and then get the kit to come back home.
I think a lot of people have done that, or I say the people that have done it always seem to really enjoy it. Like, they'll, you know, come out and be a husband and a wife or a couple, or sometimes they'll bring kids. And you know, it does speak to a little bit of what we're trying to do with this company, where, you know, like, car buying should be a fun experience, right? Like, buying a car is probably going to be the second biggest purchase of your life. It would be nice if it was something you could enjoy. You can come and have a sort of a real no-haggle experience, and a real where you feel like you're being treated fairly, you can have fun with it. So I think we've seen that in those people where they've said, like, let's turn it into a vacation. We'll come out and we'll drive back to New York and those things. So it can be a lot of fun.
All right. Ben Houston will return after this short commercial break.
Wondering if technology can help you run your business better? To help you better manage your data? To make more informed, more strategic, and faster business decisions? Say hello to Savad Business Solutions. We don't rest until we identify and put into place customized solutions to remove the bottlenecks from your organization, making you better, faster, and more effective. Learn more at SavadSolutions.com. That's S-I-V-A-D Solutions.com.
All right, and we're back with Ben Houston, Director of Market Operations and co-founder of Carvana. Talk about when you hear a list of the worst jobs, car salesman is always up there and all that. So there is this, it has this real reputation of being something that's just a yucky, icky experience, and you don't trust these guys, and you worry about, you know, that's where the old buyer beware thing came from, because it was the classic example of how you go into a dealer and you were just at a complete disadvantage. The internet has changed all that. Now it's almost celebrityware because the buyers can be really informed. But walk us through how what you're doing here, what you're building here, is going to flip all that nasty perception on its head.
Sure.
I guess another way to ask the question is, I mean, customer service still is king.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just funny the way you describe the used car salesman, because I've gone from lawyer to used car salesman, which if you look at all those studies, it's like I'm on a very dangerous downward trend. So my mom's very concerned about like what my next job is going to be. But in any event, I mean, the question's exactly right. And I think here's what I would say about brick and mortar versus online that I think is interesting in our space. Usually there's a trade-off, right? When you buy something online, a lot of times it's cheaper, it's faster, it's more convenient. That's cool. But you're giving off some information. You usually can't see it. You can't feel it. If you're buying shoes from Zappos, you don't get to try them on, but you get this great customer service experience. You can do it from your couch. And so there's that trade-off there. What I think you see in a dealership is while you're there, there's a question of, are you getting valuable information? And it's like, what we would say is that you really aren't for the most part. You've got a salesperson whose incentives aren't necessarily aligned with yours. You're going to do a test drive that might be like, take a right, take a right, take a right, take a right, pull in. Are you ready to go? Let's do this. And so what we would say is, you can replicate most of those experiences online in a way that actually can be a lot more meaningful because you can do it on your terms. So things that we're trying to do, I think have been pretty well received by customers, is just to provide massive transparency throughout the entire process. So take a couple components of our site, pricing, right? We will literally give you the market of all the cars in the market for your make, model, year, trim, adjusted for mileage. And we'll show you what cars that are out there. Some are cheaper than us, some aren't. And we'll let you know what that market looks like and how exactly we determined our price. For financing, we will show you the range of finance options. It's not something where we go make a call, we go back and talk to the finance manager. Great news, you got approved for 7.5. You don't know if you were actually approved for 5.5. That's not part of the conversation. You're kind of left with that uneasy feeling. Do I want to ask that question in front of my wife and look dumb in front of the guy? I don't know, so I'm just going to sit here. All of those, that kind of like angst, we try to just pull out of that. What we always say is like, we have good facts. Like, we have good facts on our side. We've cut out a lot of meaningful costs from the dealership, from the salesperson. And with those costs, what we can do is just be very transparent about our entire process. Let people understand exactly what we're doing. So like, here's like a prime example that you get on test drives. And this is more, I mean, some of these are more like cliche dealer examples, but you know, it's like they'll walk in the test drive and the dealer will put his hand over a ding on the car or something like that to try to make sure that the person doesn't see it and be like, it's a great vehicle, cherry red, you look great in it. What we actually do on our website is we highlight every imperfection. So we built a pretty elaborate photo booth up in Winder, Georgia. And what you can see is we will highlight every minor imperfection, every ding, if there's a scuff and those things. So when the car shows up on the person's driveway, they know exactly what they're getting. So as opposed to trying to obscure any of that, we'll say, here's exactly what the car is. It's not perfect. You know, we try to get them as nice as possible. On average, we're spending like $300 to $400 more than the traditional dealership on the reconditioning side. But if it's not perfect, we'll highlight those things to you. So again, you know exactly what you're getting. It's not a perfect process, but it's certainly a fair process.
What's the lesson there for anybody listening with any kind of company and any kind of product on the value of transparency? I mean, that changes the whole dynamic that breaks down the barriers of this trust and the icky factor, because it's you described it very well. I mean, that's the difference. Right. And that strikes me how still so many organizations just are nervous about that. But the internet's breaking that barrier down too.
And I think what's interesting about internet disruption, and it's not limited to the internet, but I think it's allowed for it more to have real meaningful differences. One thing we always say that's doesn't sound that smart when you say it, but if you think harder, you can convince yourself it's smart. It's like, you can't be different unless you're different. And that's something we always tell ourselves. Like, dealerships, as they exist today, struggle to be different from one another because at the end of the day, they're all subject to the same cost structure. They're all generally getting their cars from the same places. And so to really innovate, to change that, there's nothing meaningful different. It's Coke versus Pepsi trying to make a better marketing campaign. It's 0% financing when we know it. Why would it ever make sense for a bank to approve a 0% loan? So it's all of these games that have gotten played trying to figure out a way to grab attention in a very noisy industry. And so what we think, like, and I would say to any startups, like, if you want to be disruptive, like, you need to build something that fundamentally is different, that fundamentally changes incentives or cost structures, that allows you to do something different where you don't have to try to tell a customer a better story unless you just have a fantastic marketing guy that can do that. But if you've got good facts, then it's like, showcase those good facts and let customers embrace them. One thing on that, though, it's like, it's not easy, right? Trying to communicate the whole concept of just like, here's the fair way to buy a car. Here's how you should focus on a fair, transparent process is hard. Like, customer education plus customer selling are two worlds you don't want to mix too much.
Well, you're not probably not the first guy who came up with this idea, but you're the guy who actually stepped forward and built the thing. There's millions of people with really cool ideas. They just never execute on them. What's your advice on how to help someone get off their butt and actually start doing something here?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Well, if I had the answer, we wouldn't be on the radio. We'd be profiting. But what is your advice to someone who's in your shoes who says, I got a great idea, but they're just sitting on it?
Yeah, so I certainly don't want to overstep and say that I would know the answer because I'm certainly too far on the, or, you know, don't have the success to justify any of it like some entrepreneurs potentially could. But what I would say is, like, the initial step just to decide to do something, a lot of times I feel like is the most valuable, like, and the hardest choice of all, just to be like, I've gotten a good idea, I'm going to take a step to execute it. There will always be 1,000 reasons not to do it. There will always be a bigger player in the industry that's better positioned to do the idea that you're thinking about. There will always be a family reason or a personal reason or whatever it is not to go forward on those things. And I think sometimes you just got to kind of say, like, forget all that, I'm just going to go for it. Now, like, the aftermath of the execution obviously needs to be well thought out, put together a strong team and all of those things. But that first just step to say, like, you know, I believe in this, it's something I care about, I'm going to go for it. I think a lot of people have potential to do that, but they're not willing to take that step. So the 1,000 steps you have to take afterwards to create success, I think I'm still learning those, so I won't claim to have the answers on that. But I think, you know, I chose to take that step, and it's something that I'm very grateful for because I think my day-to-day life is extremely valuable. I feel like I'm building something that I believe in, that I'm a part of. We've got a good team that comes to work, that's fired up, that's excited. Those things to me are really valuable in just whatever you want out of a career. And I think a lot of people in the startup space in particular have found that because they've been willing to go out there and chase something.
Did you have a lemonade stand as a kid? Every story about an entrepreneur who's successful made $4 million at the lemonade stand chain at 5 years old. We couldn't have had this conversation 25 years ago. The technology just didn't exist. Talk about how important technology is to how this business that you're building. And I'm almost more intrigued to know, when we talk again in a couple of years, how will technology have evolved and how will that impact your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think technology, even in the vehicle space, has been really interesting to me, and I think to us, for what we're trying to do. What you have with the internet, and every dealership will talk about, you know, the averaged used car book, call it. Let's just say the internet's changed everything. Now there's complete transparency. Dealers, prices have all compressed. We got to be more competitive. We got to figure this out. What's actually happened is it's just created a hyper-focus on price. And I think so you've seen even a lot of the disruption in the industry right now. You're seeing in the version of TrueCar and people that are saying, like, let me get you a fair price. And the internet has allowed that because you have AutoTrader, you have Cars.com, you've got 1,000 other sites that are saying, here's what a fair price is for this vehicle. What I think is going to start happening is, like, there's going to be more transparency in the entire purchase process. I mean, what we always talk about at Carvana, if you think about the way a car is bought right now, it would be like the equivalent of a family planning a vacation. But the only price point they care about is, like, their one-way flight to California. They don't care about hotel. They don't care about their rental car. They don't care about Disneyland. They don't care about their flight back. They only focus on one portion of that entire deal. And I think that's what happens right now. If you look at dealership profits, what you've seen is they used to be all in the vehicle. Now all of that profit is shifted to financing, aftermarket products, F&I products. And that's all because there's not a lot of transparency there. Price is hard right now to make money on because there is the internet. You do have price compression. And so what I think a lot of the industry is going to be moving towards, and I think we're trying to push that, is giving a full transparent process to the entire process. I think right now it's happened on price. I think it's going to happen to the rest of it. You're going to know what a fair interest rate is for you. Ask the average person, right? I don't think they would know. What's a fair price to pay for your warranty on your 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee? No idea, right? You know what you should pay for the car, So I think those elements of the purchase process will get improved over time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know that you necessarily have a $50 million marketing budget, but sounds like a lot of what you do is you turn your customers into brand advocates. Talk about that strategy and that process a bit.
Yeah,
you mentioned your Facebook.
Yeah, we've got some great customers, and I think that's hard. I think we've been very committed as a new company. I mean, it's online and it's used cars, right? So you couldn't be in two areas where there's
founded
less
by
trust.
A lawyer,
right? So it's just a dangerous combination. There's no reason why anybody should buy from us. No, but and I think we've really focused on making sure consumers have great experiences. Some of our most loyal customers are people where things have gone wrong and we've just gone out of our way to fix it. I mean, they appreciate that. Like, we don't promise that we'll be perfect. We just promise we'll be fair for you through the whole thing. And then I think we try to go the extra mile. Like, an example of a customer that was great for us was she bought a car. She was getting a bigger vehicle because she was getting an FJ Cruiser because she got a second dog. And that was kind of like a big thing for her. And so we went out, and before we stopped at her house for her home delivery, we stopped by a local pet store and got a couple of dog beds, a couple of bones, put them in the back seat for her, right? Small cost, small dollars, but to her it meant the world. It was like this company was like, it was personalized to her. It's like we knew a little bit about her situation. We tried to give her something small that just says like, hey, you know, hopefully this makes your day a little better. I think we've tried to build a company. We're going back to what you said earlier, we're customer services king. Like, we even say Zappos, I think, is the one that started this. Be a great customer service company that happens to sell cars. Mm. You know, and I think that focus is a big part of like how we're ultimately going to grow. And I think a lot of the success we've seen in the last 6 months, and we've been growing extremely rapidly, has been a big part of people have great experiences. They post it on Facebook. They tell their friends about it. And we're seeing some of that feedback where people be like, I heard about you from my friend who bought it, said they'll never buy a car another way. If you go and read our reviews on our website, you'll see like half of them will say, I will never buy a car another way than this process. I think focusing on making sure that customer has a great experience is the best way that ultimately we can get them to tell one or two people.
Well, you know, hearing the example of getting the dog beds for your customer, I mean, it's not rocket science. Right? I mean, you got degrees from Stanford and Harvard. Just because you'd have that doesn't mean you were smart enough to come up with a dog bed idea. I mean, it's just a comment, you know, and there's books about, I mean, how many books about Zappos and what they do? Yeah, it seems like majority of organizations out there just aren't willing to do those kinds of things. It baffles my mind. Do you have any explanation for it?
Well, I think, here's what I do think. There's early on as a startup, you're very focused on building a brand. And, you know, every profit is not maybe not the only consideration as it becomes once you're public and now you're quarterly reports and you're doing those sorts of things. And I think there's always a reason if you have to cut something, customer service down the road of like, maybe we don't need to get the two dog beds and the bones because I want to maximize margin to the nth degree or whatever it might be. I think, you know, and ultimately I think that falls on the people at the top. It's like, where are those incentives? Like, how are the salespeople being paid? Or in our case, what we call them customer advocates. And so nobody gets paid on a commission, nobody gets paid on any of these things to make sure that their incentive is create a great customer experience. And then they're compensated well for creating great experiences and not for hitting a sales number. Because once you start shifting incentives like that in any direction, people will respond to incentives. And I think a great thing we have in our company, and it comes from our president, is just top down, we are 100% committed to the idea of like, let's change the used car industry. Let's come at it from a completely different way. Let's rethink every question that's ever been thought about in used cars and think about it in a way where we put the customer first. Because from the beginning, the customer has not been a primary consideration. And so, you know, I'm hopeful and confident that we will continue that outlook for the, you know, the entirety of Carvana.
Yeah. Well, the lesson is you may have lost a few bucks in margin with buying a few dog beds and some bones, but when she buys again in a couple of years and then her friends all buy because of the recommendation, boom, that's where that margin comes back. That's the, I don't know why it's so hard for people to get that through their thick head. All right. Well, Ben, I hate to say it, but we are about out of time. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you and where can they learn more about Carvana?
Sure, they can head to Carvana.com, and we also have a phone number on the website, and there's cars to check out, and if they're interested in careers, we're hiring across the board pretty much for every position, so check out the website, and love to hear from anyone.
All right, Ben Houston, Director of Market Operations and the co-founder of Carvana. Ben, it was great to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us. All right, well, that wraps this broadcast. On behalf of my guest, Ben Houston, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon in the incubator.